Does it put you in orbit or does it crash land? We watched the adventures of Pluto Nash from 2002 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome back to the Redeeming Features podcast. This time checking out the adventures of Pluto Nash from 2002. I am Trevor Holland and I am joined by my very good friend and co-host,
Christian Fletcher. Thank you so much, Trevor. It's great to be back visually and orally.
Well, visually for our lovely Patreon subscribers, and you should totally go to patreon.com/RufusProject and join up, where you will get to see live video of us recording this bollocks. It's all fun.
Definitely. Now, and as we always say, Trevor, even if the movies aren't any good, the chats are always fun.
We'll find some way to make it happy. Yeah, I miss this chat so very much. Now, I probably will just quickly mention, if you have not seen The Adventures of Pluto Nash and you desperately want to avoid spoilers, we will be spoiling it quite heavily. So if you do want to watch it first, check it out, then come back to the podcast and enjoy from there.
Yeah, I always recommend to people if they've watched a movie and are dumbstruck, listen to the podcast afterwards. So I think that's definitely the order to listen to if you want to visit it.
yes, indeed. So probably should talk a bit more about this movie suggested by my good friend Christian here.
I know. As I mentioned, I'd seen this on a lot of bad movie lists, so I thought it was time we looked at this. Not necessarily something that I had a connection with, but I thought it was time to have a look at it. But God, even just looking at it now, Trevor, like the cast list, you got Peter Boyle, Pam Grier, Eddie Murphy, the list goes on, and all these many other cameos. So it's one of those movies that must have gone under the radar quite a lot, but just looking at its box office and its success, I believe it was made for $100 million and made $7 million. Now people talking about talking about a recent film that has gone badly, at least that made a $60 million. So $7 million versus $100 million budget doesn't look too good in the box office records. So
yes. Well, that certainly covers some of the turkey trivia ahead of time, but that's all right. What we'll do is before we tie, I suppose, to talk too much about those bits, I've got a list of awards here that this movie was nominated for. I'm sure you can guess which award ceremonies we're talking about. So the Razzies actually nominated this for the worst comedy, in quotes, of our first 25 years. So that was in 2005.
Oh, so this was a comedy. Good to know. I'm just going to add that to my list. Sorry. Continue.
For the actual movie itself, it was nominated in the Razzies for Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Worst Screen Couple, Worst Director, and Worst Screenplay. And the Stinkers Bad Movies Awards also nominated for Worst Supporting Actor for Randy Quaid, Worst Actor, Eddie Murphy, Worst On-Screen Couple for Eddie Murphy and anyone forced to star with him. The most painfully unfunny comedy, Worst Picture, and Worst Sense of Direction for Rod Underwood as a director. And I don't know if it's a good or bad thing to say that with all the nominations, it couldn't even win a Razzie or a Stinker.
Gosh, they were probably just so dumbstruck. Or maybe there was just a lot of bad movies in. Was it 2002? I think it was, yeah.
It was 2002, yeah. So it might have been a pretty spectacular movie for the turkeys.
Yeah.
And speaking of turkeys, we'll talk a bit of turkey trivia. Now, as Christian's already mentioned, had a budget of $100 million. It took $7.1 million at the box office worldwide, making it one of the biggest losses of all time. It's rated a grand total of 3.8 out of 10 on IMDb, so doing very, very well. Now, you mentioned before, there's quite a few big names that appear, and including Alec Baldwin, who shows up in a cameo at one point.
That's right. I had a few of them written down here, yeah.
Yep. He disliked the film so much that he insisted on remaining uncredited.
Is that what he's come out and said since, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. When it was released, Eddie Murphy refused to promote it and stated that money is the only reason he took the role. And Jennifer Lopez and Halle Berry were first and second choices for the role of Dina Lake, but both passed on it. Berry declined because the filming schedule clashed with her wedding, and that's why we got Rosario Dawson, who was also a fine good actor.
Yeah, well, actually, she's appeared a couple of times. I'm thinking probably Josie and the Pussycats, and that's it. But she has appeared a couple of times on the podcast. So it's interesting seeing her name come up again. So, yeah, a lot of these big names here. And I don't know about yourself, Trevor, but I have no recollection of this movie ever coming out or playing cinemas out here. But I don't know if I was really paying attention at much around that time.
I think it was a blink and miss it one, honestly. I knew I was aware of the title from somewhere, but yeah, went into this movie knowing nothing but what I'd seen in the trailer, which...
Yeah, I hadn't even watched the trailer, so I'm going in completely blind. Eddie Murphy trying to do a space comedy, that's kind of the rough gist of what I went in with. So I'm glad we kind of had blind eyes with that, so...
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes the best way, going in completely not knowing what to expect, that can be a good thing sometimes.
Oh,
it can.
Definitely.
And so, but before we talk about, I suppose, our experience, now, this is the Redeeming Features podcast. What that means is we take a movie with less than stellar box office reputation or performances and see if they can actually be redeemed. So to do that, we need to set our baseline. So I went to Amazon and checked out the reviews, and I found this rather succinct and to the point review, simply titled "Ouch." All I can say is, "Ouch." Eddie Murphy must still be stinging from this bad career move. 1 star.
Well, really, I think that did sum it up quite succinctly, actually.
Well, I'm telling you though, when the movie did start, I was quite enjoying that funky version of Blue Moon.
I know. Yeah, and then as we always say, Trevor, it's always good seeing these old, like, when I say old logos, because nowadays with Disney owning everything, it is refreshing to see the water logo come up. But yeah, I was the same. I was thinking to myself, gee, I'm going to really like this soundtrack. And
then the rest started.
With a lot of things that ended up, with a lot of things that happened with this movie, it would make you go, oh, wow, you're going to do, they're not going to do anything more with that. So that was one of the first things that sort of happened with that.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, though, I found the score itself, I mean, just stick with the music, it was actually quite grandiose. There was a lot of like big horns and stuff over this dodgy CGI of the lunar surface and these cities, and quite sweeping. I mean, it was still electronic type music, but it was still quite sweeping. I'm thinking, wow, you're really bigging up this movie with the music behind it. But then if they actually put a song in there as part of the movie, as part of a performance, because there's, I suppose, a couple of times when people sing, they did use the Songs of the Moon references a few times, you know.
Oh, yes, I know. I had to laugh when Tony Francis did his big number later on at the casino, and of course he did Fly Me to the Moon. Like, of course.
Of course.
Like, it would have been Blue Moon if they hadn't used it at the start. But that's what I found really interesting about it, Trevor, is, as we said, going in completely blind, and you're okay, okay, awesome opening song. We're zooming into this, as you said, the lunar, or the they're all living on the moon, let's just say. And I mean, from what I've gathered, they set up their own versions of America. Pretty much the Earth was on the moon, and you needed a, I think a lot of people said like a one-way, a lot of people had one-way tickets to go up there. So I believe it had made, I think they called them, what do they call them, mooners and earthlings? Is that what they called them?
Yeah, something like that. Like,
yeah.
A lot of the dialogue, I have to ask you,
and like what I was saying before, a lot of things that you started to go, I'll question it, or, oh my God, they might explain a little bit more. It's onto the next gag, or actually gag's probably a bit of a stretch, but yeah, onto the next thing. And the last thing you expect with a movie that's supposedly set on the moon and given us that sort of opening is that Tony Francis opening scene where we're pretty much just suddenly in a bar. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. And it struck me a lot, not just in that scene, but going forward, that a lot of these scenes could have been taking place anywhere except the moon and you wouldn't have batted an eyelid. So I just felt they already, I thought, oh, they could have gone, you know, balls to the wall and made this as campy sci-fi spacesuits, you know, all that kind of Jetson. It could have been a live action Jetsons, but already I was going, oh, this is already not feeling like it should be. So do you remember the live action Flintstone movies they did? It kind of reminded me of their attempt to do something like that. Like if they made a Jetsons movie really badly as a live action movie, this is kind of the vibe I think that this movie would fit. So I was getting this from the outset, and as I said, as soon as they took us straight into that bar in the opening scene, I'm like, oh, what, no space shuttles, no, we find out a lot more of that comes a bit later.
Yep. And the bar, the I guess the filthiest bar on the moon, I'm guessing we're saying, and we get our whole exposition to give Eddie Murphy his entire backstory when the mobsters come in and tie up Tony Francis and gonna pour battery acid down his throat. That's funny. Because he still owed the money because he hadn't made any money from his filthy bar. And, oh, look, Eddie was a smuggler. Eddie was in with the mafia guys in prison. Oh, they all love Eddie or Pluto.
And he's got the money to be able to turn this into the best bar. Because suddenly it seems like, actually, I think it said 7 years later was the transition from when he took over the bar, but which is an odd amount of years. But anyway, it kind of seemed like a few. But, yeah. You obviously knew that Eddie had the connections to make this bar really take off. And yet, Trevor, I'm already thinking, are we watching Space Cocktail?
It was a bit like that.
I was trying to think, is the whole plot of this going to be someone taking over a bar and then making it work? And then, yeah, I was probably jumping ahead of myself, but for a movie that was supposedly set on the moon, I just thought already they could have thrown a bit more stuff down our throat. Like.
Yeah,
but then we see, yeah, exactly. Actually, I think that might have been better in our eyes in some respect. But then we get Rosario Dawson turn up, who this is what I was saying earlier about she'd had she was an Earthling that had got a one-way ticket up to the moon, and she pretty much would do anything to get out of there. And again, I'll give you a job, waiting tables or whatever. And again, I'm like, cocktail too,
She was a singer who'd been promised a job, but by the time she got there, after being given a one-way ticket to the moon, the club had closed down. So now she had to find another job, and ended up working for Pluto. Talking about things that I suppose I didn't build on, I just noticed. I've got to bring this up now because it's in that intro where they're panning over the city, Little America as it is on the moon, and they're sort of like panning through, and there's a movie theater, and in the year 2080, on the moon, they're showing the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You picked that up because it's so funny you say that because I must have been a blink and miss it moment. I'm like, oh, there were names on that title there, and Trevor, you caught it. Oh, that's great.
Oh, hey, good.
Honestly, Trevor, I think on the moon in that many years to come, they probably will be watching it, so it's probably quite accurate.
I think that was the most believable part of the entire movie, that, yes, in 2080 on the moon, there would be a cinema showing Rocky Horror because, there should be.
And that's the thing. Like, I don't know if I'm dropping ahead of myself. There's clever touches throughout the movie. Clever is probably even giving it, is too much of a stretch, but there were little glimmers of pop culture references that I thought, oh, wow, what a great idea. But again, nothing was ever developed. Like whenever there's any reference to money, they brought out the cash that had Hillary Clinton's face on it, which I thought for 2002 was sort of fitting. not exactly what's happened, but you know what I mean? And just little clever things like that. And I think if the movie had done more of that sort of stuff and maybe developed more the whole concept of being on the moon, we want to sort of know what that's like, not just there happens to be another place that they've created. And oh my God, they seem to love casinos up there too.
Yes. And oh, look, there's a housing development with a Trump sign.
Oh, God. Can we avoid him? Not even on the moon, you can avoid him. So the whole thing about the casino, and again, I'm starting to think, okay, is the plot pretty much going to be, you know, them trying to infiltrate this casino? But we see Rosario and. I was going to say Trevor there, Rosario and who sort of team up. And I think that, they pretend to play husband and wife and go through all these different protocols to get through to this casino thing. But again, a lot of build up that doesn't really go anywhere. And again, not really one of those movies that has that action that really makes you go, wow, I can't wait to see what happens. Which I think a lot of movies need to have that kind of draw power. Already you're going, eh? Even 10 minutes in, I was like that.
I was really thinking that, you know, with Eddie Murphy, he really got to use the experience he built in Beverly Hills Cop in this movie, because it tries to be, I guess, an action comedy. It has so many predictable cliches. He's got a club. There's a casino that operates. He's in an area that doesn't allow gambling, that apparently is going to allow gambling. So they're like, oi, the bad guy, Rex, what's his face? So much of this has already fallen out of my head. I only watched it.
Yeah. Was he the Rex Crater guy? Again, Rex, there's names Rex like Crater. Crater. Names like Crater, you go, they really didn't think too much out.
He wants your club.
Would have been a bit of thought, sorry.
Yeah. He wants your club. No, I don't want to sell my club. You don't say no to Rex Crater. Oh, look, the club gets blown up. What a surprise.
And already, Trevor, you're going, this is a movie about set on the moon. Why are we talking about club politics? Owning nightclubs.
Yeah.
And then I think there's a little, you know, I know we're all over the place here, but there's a scene, I've actually got it written down, about 42 minutes into it, Rosario Dawson and, sorry, what was her name? Dina, that's right. Or Dinah? Dina?
Dina, yeah. Dinah.
And D-I-N-A. I did like the name.
Yep.
Interesting spelling. But yeah, so let's just say Rosario and Eddie finally put on spacesuits and they start to do, you know, the kind of space jumping, you know, it's kind of like the battle in space. And that's kind of the vibe I think they should have had even much earlier on to sort of, otherwise, pre that, you really could have just been in a studio bound set. And it reminded me a lot of that Super Mario Brothers movie, Trevor. Do you know how it feels very, you know, when they're in that city and it feels very studio bound? That's what this film gave me the vibe of. You didn't feel like you knew where you were.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There was no point in 80% of this movie being set on the moon. There's just the one section where they get out of the city to be safe, but the bad guys find him in his little smuggler's lair easily enough after the hilarious cameo by John Cleese as the robot.
I was going to say the limo boys.
The limo boys, yeah.
I know. Why does he seem to turn up in shitty cameos like that nowadays? I know it's not nowadays, but yeah, in the last 20 years.
I don't know. But yeah, like, as you mentioned before, there's these people in this movie, like, yeah, Peter Boyle, Rosario Dawson, Alec Baldwin, John Cleese. Just like, you guys are better than this.
I couldn't believe it. Well, I couldn't believe it. Then you had Pam Grier turn, you know, Cleopatra Jones herself turn up and play Pluto's mum. But I must admit, it was good seeing her wielding a shotgun, or even though it was a laser beam or whatever, a laser gun. Mm-hmm. It was good seeing her do that again. But again, you just thought the writing was so bad, but you also just did not invest or care. And I don't know, it's unlike me to say this, but it was actually one of those movies where I kind of craved for Eddie Murphy to come out with his different rubbery characters that he normally comes out with, kind of like in Coming to America, a worse extent, the clumps. Yes. You know what I mean? Where he plays a lot of other characters. And I think that would have been a lot more, I was kind of craving for that, which is unlike me to say that, but you just wanted something to inject some kind of life into it. You had, is it Louis Guzman that turns up in the, I can't remember what he was doing in the car, but I was just, he came along and just kind of gave it just a bit of an injection for 5 minutes that it kind of needed, because at an hour 40, trust me, by 40 minutes in, even earlier, it was dragging.
Well, I mean, because it really was just, it's just like there was no other way out. They're in the middle of nowhere on the moon. They crash landed way off the road. They're running out of oxygen. His robot bodyguard is running out of power. It's like, oh, there's no way anyone's going to find him. And then this, yeah, he just rocks up. You know, he's off the beaten track because he's a smuggler who worships Pluto Nash. How convenient. It's like, look, I know this is just a stupid comedy set on the moon.
Don't even call it a comedy, Trevor. That's an insult to the worst comedy of all time. I don't think I've used it once or laughed once.
I will be coming back to that in my discussion afterwards, but that's all right.
But it sounds like we think,
even by the far-fetched standards of this movie, that seemed just completely off the chart. That he would just happen to be in that exact spot on the moon at that exact moment to save them all.
Oh, they probably were like, we don't know how to end this stupid movie. Let's just do this. But that annoyed you. What about the ending of the film? I know, again, jumping forward, but in terms of the whole, pretty much there's two Eddie Murphys or the two Pluto Nashes and stuff. And to me, that seemed like such a cop-out, Trevor. Did that seem like a cop-out to you? It was just like, of course. Okay, so he did play another character. He played himself.
He did.
Admittedly, I'll be honest, the double work was very convincing. I know by 2002 it was probably pretty good in that, you know, for the 2 minutes that was involved with it. But, you just start to go, oh, wow, you went with the whole, oh, there was two of them. You didn't.
Yeah.
That just seems cop-out.
Yeah, I actually found that as a kind of nice twist, in a way. And yeah, the double work was quite good, even though as soon as you got over the initial, oh, okay, so the bad guy's a clone of Pluto Nash. All right, fair enough. But yeah, after that initial little bit, it's like, and we know exactly where this is going, don't we? Yes, we do. Which one's Pluto? Which one's Rex? Oh, I'm Rex. Oh, shoot him.
And I think when Rosario comes forward, the only way they could detect it was he said something about, I can't remember what it was, but some reference they'd made earlier about something she likes. I can't remember off the top of my head. See, Trevor, it's left my brain already.
he offered her a job waiting tables.
Yes, and it was one of those things the other guy wouldn't know. Yeah. Oh my God, it sounds so underwhelming like that. Bit of information. No, we haven't. I know we've gone all over the place, but we haven't touched on Randy the robot, Randy Quaid. Look, Randy Quaid always comes in to give you some sort of goofiness, but this was probably a goofiness that was too goofy for him. It was even. It was so much more that could have happened. I know we sort of developed a little bit more when typical. Oh my God, he sees a female robot and starts to have feelings, you know, those typical gags. But
yeah,
I really think he was underutilized, but it seemed like a fitting part for him knowing his previous work.
Well, I mean, yeah, with Randy the bodyguard robot being, you know, quite robotic and not showing a lot of emotion, I actually found that he was the most emotionally engaging character in the movie, closely followed by Babette the whoops robot. She had more emotional depth than most of the people in this movie.
Oh God, yes, yeah. The script writers didn't realize I'd given her the most depth. I think everyone even went running once the script. Even though that's still a stretch to give that sort of. we're clutching at straws, people here, with what we were given. So, but see what I mean? Like this could have been a really good. I keep using the Jetsons reference, but it's what I imagine a really bad Jetsons live adaptation would be like. And then you're just like, don't do that. But I do like the bits when Randy the Robot, when they go to the casino, and because they're in the future, the poker machines are like robots, pretty much like the Jetsons, yeah. and he pretty much breaks its arm off and she goes, "You're not a very nice person," or something like that. And they were trying to, mm-hmm. again, we're 10 minutes out from the end, going, "Oh, you're trying to throw some last minute laughs in, are you?"
Trying very yes. difficult. And of course, yeah, you know, they, yeah, this is where they pretend to be man and wife and they go in and so the smuggler dude name and actually has gone from my brain. Like I said, I just
yeah,
pretty tells you all you need to know, the fact that I cannot recall much at all from this movie, except for getting through it.
it sounds like a similar comments from everyone who's seen it, from what I've read.
Yeah, but as soon as they walk through the casino, of course, he's there, he's using loaded dice, and he sees him, he goes, "Hey, it's Pluto Nash! Pluto, come over here, Pluto Nash! Everybody, look, it's Pluto Nash, because the bad guys are so inept, they don't know that Pluto Nash has walked into their own casino, but look, it's Pluto Nash!" Because they needed a reason for the bad guys to be aware he was there, so it was just like, "Oh, my God. Put this sledgehammer in here." And it just kept going.
I was caring by now. I know. Because that's something I think, because obviously this is a one where I looked at the clock quite a lot. And I was just, I think it was at around this point where you're still going, "There's still 15, 20 minutes left. What are they honestly going to do?" And yeah, a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they need the extended revelation and fight scene between Eddie Murphy and Eddie Murphy. That's what they need to do. Oh, yeah.
I was cutting edge probably technology for them, maybe in 2002. Okay, maybe not.
It was good for 2002. I will come back and say that fight and encounter scene from a technical level was pretty good for 2002, and compared to the rest of this movie, it's kind of like, if you could have put that sort of extra into a lot of this other movie, well, you still need a better script, but at least it would have looked better.
Yeah, again, it needed to have that campy feel, that campy sci-fi feel, which doesn't, not saying sci-fi automatically has to have that feel, but I just think they could have run with that and it would have had that comedic kind of parody element where these references like the Hillary Clinton cash and all that sort of stuff would be like, oh, yeah, that's clever they thought of that. Instead, they were just afterthoughts that were never really developed and honestly, you didn't care.
Well, yeah, when you've got essentially a real-life cartoon character, I mean, look, you look at that the title on the thing is like full on, almost like cartoon comic book style, you know, Pluto Nash, you know, you can't, it's difficult to have a comic version of that, well, a comedy, and play it straight. I mean, that's really what it was. A lot of this played straight when a bit more goofing around, a bit more camping it up, probably would have made a huge difference. It probably still would have been funny, but it might have just been a bit more enjoyable.
I think even calling it The Adventures Of was probably a stretch. I don't think there was anything too adventurous about it, to be honest, but anyway.
Pluto Nash dealing with bad guys who are all really, really bad shots.
Pluto Nash, the casino years. But yeah, so I think everyone, plus each of us, are starting to realize what we think about this movie, I think.
Yeah, honestly, this is probably going to be a pretty short episode because I am running out of things to say. I mean, they did sort of pay off the whole thing about Dina being a singer by when, of course, at the end, Pluto rebuilds his club and gets it back, and it's opening night, and she comes out as a singer, and it's like, could you have given her a better song? That song was awful.
I can't even remember what the song was. Was it a moon-related song? I've already forgotten.
I don't think it was, but it was like, it was so bad.
And there's always got to be those scenes where she looks over at the bar and he happens to catch her eye and there's like a wink. Oh, my God, you got me this job. Yes. And it's like, but why do these people always have to be, like, she wanted any job she could. Why did she happen to be a singer and he needed one at the end? Again, ties up the loose ends. Why couldn't she just be a girl wanting any kind of work?
Yeah, I know. I guess, you know, I don't know. This movie, I don't know. It's one of those ones that just doesn't make sense. A lot of what happens doesn't make sense or seems rather pointless. They try funny bits like when they're in his smuggler's den in the middle of the moon just because, hey, this will be funny. Let's have Rosario Dawson pull out a cryogenically frozen chihuahua. It's like,
yeah,
okay. And he just ends up being, yeah, you know, the cryogenically frozen chihuahua. They're worth a lot of money. You put it in the oven, bake it for 5 minutes, and bang, you're good to go.
It's like, yeah.
And?
Yeah. It was realizing it wasn't too moon related or space related. It's like they've just thrown these little extra things in just to remind you one last time. But I think there was even a reference, I may be getting it wrong, where they're talking about what street it was, corner of Fifth Street and Microsoft Avenue. Oh, because Microsoft.
Yeah.
So funny. But yeah, so that kind of gives you the level of the humor, ladies and gentlemen, that have bothered still watching this. I don't think many people would have still been in the cinemas by the end credits, Trevor, but we did watch it to the end, and yeah.
Nothing, we did.
Again, nothing, no stinger or anything, not setting us up for a sequel. What a shame.
and more really bad closing credit songs. I don't even know what those songs were. I actually thought it was Eddie Murphy rapping, but I did pay enough attention to see who was actually performing, and it wasn't.
Yeah, I thought that in the opening. The funny thing is that there's two songs in the end credits. The first one sounded really familiar as something I remember from the 90s. So maybe something I've suppressed. So we'll leave
quite
that
possibly.
One alone.
It was not a, and the second one, of course, had like little snippets of dialogue and stuff from the movie, which would have been like, you know, it's like, yeah, well, it's a bad song.
Fans would have loved it.
Yeah. The,
whatever
the,
fans the fan, were there.
The fan.
And
the
that's
fan
just the fan that was on in the cinema.
Actually, I didn't mention that the trivia before, but apparently Eddie Murphy once did an interview where he said he personally knows the two or three people that likes The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Oh, God. Are they still living?
I don't know.
I know there has been a couple of interviews where he did come out and say the worst movie I ever did. So I don't know. There's been some other corkers, bad corkers that he's done, but yeah, I think this would definitely be up there. So, Trevor, how are you feeling about this movie?
Well, funny you should ask, because I guess we're at that stage already. Well, a short podcast, a good podcast, I suppose, now that we have got to the very, very end. Now, you did choose this movie, Christian, so I shall share my thoughts initially. Okay. Well, you know what? It was unfunny. It was predictable. It did go at a steady pace, so even though it seemed a bit long in the tooth, at least there was enough action to kind of stop it getting completely boring. The final fight with the two Eddies, as we mentioned, was quite well done. You know what? There were some bits I found that were almost funny and almost there, and some action bits that were almost entertaining, and I think ultimately that's what makes this even worse. If they'd just been consistently bad all the way through, it would have simply been a bad movie. But because it came very close to being entertaining a few times, it pushes it further down the pot. I've got nothing more to say. This movie is not redeemable. It's not.
I was worried at the last bit there, Trevor. I'm like, oh, is he changing his tune? Look, my final thoughts won't be as in depth, because I've kind of rambled up a lot of things that I felt. But yeah, look, this is one of those movies where, look, I know we've mentioned in the past, Trevor, if you had to give an award for a movie, I'm going to say this would be the award for wasted casting. Not that the cast wish they were wasted, maybe, but more the fact, what a great cast list, and hence the reason probably why they only did cameos. They didn't want to have to be in any more than this. Now, look, it's strange that they thought of this particular plot or this particular concept would work well for a comedy movie. Like, I know Eddie Murphy, he's tried pretty much, I suppose, everything. And this was probably the next sort of obvious thing for him. And it just didn't seem to work. And it just felt like, as I said, a live action bad Jetsons movie, or even the Super Mario Brothers to another extent. So this could have been a really campy sci-fi romp, kind of in the Barbarella's a bad example. But, you know, that kind of really gaudy Flash Gordon. Another example,
it could have
just committed to that kind of tone and run with that a little bit more. And again, that would fit the poster a lot better than the movie we got. So look, there were some really clever touches with the the references to the future, but it was too little too late. Like, for a movie that's talking about setting up life on the moon, I don't know, I just think more could have been done with that concept rather than just sort of throwing us in the deep end in a nightclub and expecting this world just to be, okay, normal. So a couple of things. I liked Rosario's name, Dina or Dina, D-I-N-A, and it was great seeing Pam Grier wield a gun, even though it was a laser gun and not a rifle, whatever, a revolver, whatever she's used in the past. So Trevor, definitely, I'm in the same thing as you. Definitely irredeemable. And please, I'm just going to say this, if there's ever going to be a live action Jetsons movie, don't make it like this.
Absolutely not. So, yeah, if there was any doubt about where we'll be going after our chat about this movie, it's been well and truly quashed as a very firm and definite irredeemable movie. So
sorry for those yeah, two or three people out there that Eddie Murphy knows that likes this movie. We apologize in advance.
Well, you know what, as we say, we may not have been able to redeem it, but as always, there does seem to be some fans, and because this is the redeemable features, we do like to finish on a high note. I did find a 5-star review. It took a bit of digging because a lot of them were just like, oh, it's such a great movie to laugh at with your friends and that sort of scenario. I'm a bit disturbed by the tone of this review, but it was the only thing that sounded anywhere.
This is a perfect reason. I'm glad you
genuine for the 5 stars. So here we go. The title of this is, I don't want to say this, Fantastic Kids Film. This film is a fantastic choice for the kids, and adults will love it too. Bought it for my son last week, and he has already watched it 3 times. I didn't have high expectations. However, this film blows all other kids' films out of the water. There will defiantly... Oh, God, I should have proofread this person's
title. Definitely.
there were definitely some moments and quotes that your kids and you will never forget. Absolute bargain. Brings a smile and a million laughs. 10 out of 10, summer spectacular, winky face. 5 stars.
But she said her son might have watched it for 3 years. I mean, three times. Has she checked on him recently? Is he still breathing?
That sounds like the worst torture
a parent can put a child through. So, oh, well, each to their own. But
I'm wondering if I should forward that review to the authorities anyway. Yes. But as we like to say, if you enjoy a movie, we respect you for that, even if you're wrong.
Definitely. I like to think we're not too harsh. There's some pretty harsh podcasts out there about movies. I think we're pretty unbiased, but if it sucks, it sucks, and we'll let you know.
we're not going to lie or try to do what I did at the very beginning of this podcast and deliberately find redeeming features. If there's not really that many, I still regret the section I did on Blood Rain, and I apologize to anyone who watched that movie after I did 5 redeeming features for it.
Oh, yeah, Trevor, that name should just not be mentioned again. But for those who want to revisit, they're available on the archive.
Absolutely. <Please do. laughs> Or follow the Rufus Project Flashback podcast, and there will be more of those coming out soon, I promise.
Lots to keep you going in the meantime.
Indeed. So I think we need to move on from the adventures of Pluto Nash as quickly as possible.
Please.
Now, you chose this movie, Christian, so I guess that means I had to make a call about the next one.
Oh, gosh, here we go. Honestly, it can only go up or sideways from here, surely.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, there was a few I was thinking about, and I thought, no, I'm not going to do that because then I have to watch that as well. I want a particular that I won't mention.
I've got to remember that.
Yeah, but to be honest, I picked this next movie because I'm pretty sure it's on your list, Christian. And if I suggest it, then at least I maintain some illusion of control here. Look, I can think of no way. I can think of no way to talk around what this is, so I'll just get straight to the point. We are heading to the dark, mysterious days of 2019 and checking out the star-studded musical catastrophe of Cats.
I wondered how long before this. I actually am one of those few people that own the Blu-ray.
Ooh.
We'll get into that in the next episode. That's interesting, Trevor. I'll say my connections with this musical and this movie next time we chat. But yes, it was on my list for down the track. So I'm glad you uncovered it. So
absolutely. Now, Christian may have that on Blu-ray, but if you do want to check it out.
I've just told everyone now anyway.
You have indeed. Oh, we're just losing control of it. Now, if you do want to check it out before our next podcast, which I promise will be sooner rather than later, maybe. It's currently available to stream in Australia on Prime Video and Binge. It can also be rented or purchased on YouTube, Apple TV, Google Play, Microsoft, and Fetch. Of course, if you are overseas, I'm sure you have many more options than we do in Australia. It's getting better, but it's still not the best.
We make do where we can, and we don't do too badly with getting access to this. So there's a lot more options than there were, say, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So
that is very, very true. Awesome stuff. So I'm trying to think of what to do next.
I don't have any events at the moment, but if you want to head to christianfletcher.com or Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook, you can follow everything, because at the moment, as Trevor and I have said, everything's up in the air with life. So who knows what next week's going to bring. So jump onto the website and we'll announce events as soon as we're able to do them.
Absolutely. And to keep up with all things Rufus Project Presents, you can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com. You can follow the Rufus Project Presents on Facebook. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/Rufus Project. So if you're happy to flick us a few dollars there, not only will you get early access to all our podcasts, you'll also get a whole pile of bonuses like live streaming of the recordings, an extra bonus content. We've got Hype or Shite. We've got really need to do another Join Our Cult at some point. That was fun. Got to get back to that one. The next one probably going to be Flash Gordon. We've already done Rocky Horror Picture Show and Blues Brothers, so Flash Gordon is most likely to be the next one, if it ever happens. And anything else that I think I can subject you to, I've got some live gameplay videos there where I've checked out some games and streamed them and saved them and done comments over them and, you know, that old chestnut.
There's
lots to keep you going. Also, check out the other Rufus Project Presents podcast, What the History, that I do with my gorgeous wife, Susie, where we get a couple of bizarre bits of history to make you say, What the History. Now, we have recently released a fresh episode of that one as well, trying to get back into a regular schedule. But with things the way they are and have been, I have been following the advice of, and the advice I give everyone is to please look after yourselves. And if things need to wait, they need to wait. So
exactly. Yeah, they'll always be bad.
I'm going to apologize for it. Yes. I would like to bring these to you more often, but like I said, at the moment, it's a matter of doing what we can, where we can, how we can, and look after ourselves and our loved ones. And I hope you guys out there are also keeping safe and doing well. We wish everyone the best in these uncertain times.
Definitely. And we look forward to seeing you again next time, whether it's historical, pop culture, hysterical, or just good or bad movie.
Absolutely. I think, I went a bit more philosophical than I intended. So I think we should wrap this up before things get any more maudlin. And so we shall return with our look at if Cats from 2019 can be redeemed. And until then, enjoy watching whatever you want to enjoy watching. And we will catch you later. Farewell.
See you next time. Bye.
Tonight is a magical night where I choose the cat that deserves a new life.
Going to the ball could get dangerous.
Come on! Let's dance!
I judge a cat by its soul.
I've got plenty of soul.
Spotlight!
And a drum roll, please.
Milk!
It's party time!
The most deserving cat will be reborn into another life. So they can be who they've always dreamed of being.
What's your name?
Cat got your tongue?
Here we go!
Don't mess with the crazy cat lady.
Now it is time to make the choice.
Right, well, that's not going to work, is it? That's what I say to you.
Cross paws.
Come, we're about to begin.
I love it.
But it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.